So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Joining us today is Sam Rutherford, Senior Writer. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. This is a super geeky episode because, honestly, I'm a little tired about talking about all the Apple stuff, but there's one more thing. There are a couple more things we can talk about. So there was the great iFixit teardown of the iPhone 14 and 14 Pro Max. So I want to talk about the 14 especially and why it's so cool that it's so repairable. And also, NVIDIA finally announced their new RTX 4000 series GPUs, and those are just super exciting, although I really wonder who are they actually for? As always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Drop us an email, podcast@engadget.com, and you can join us live Thursdays around 10 a.m. Eastern at our YouTube channel. But let's get straight into the iPhone 14, which we've talked so much about this phone, Sherlyn, and I think the overarching idea is that it seems kind of boring, right? Like, they reused the iPhone 13 Pro processor. They didn't really change much otherwise. Maybe the cameras were a little better, but otherwise, kind of a humdrum update until iFixit tore this thing open.
No, here, I want to be very clear on this. This is not something we didn't know. This is something we said in our review, too, that, like, Apple has said one of the biggest changes to the iPhone 14 is something we can't see until we break the back glass of the phone, which is repairability. It's improved repairability. This is something we knew since the review. It's written in our reviews as well. But obviously, I wasn't going to break my review unit see if it was easier to repair. To be clear,
it's one thing to believe Apple saying it.
Nice to see iFixit sure be able to tear it, because, like, who else but iFixit could figure that out too, right? For us, like, I'm not gonna, to your point, the back glass has been separated from the housing. So if you drop your phone and you crack the back glass, you can now only replace the back glass without having to change out the whole enclosure. That is at least
in the past, that was like a $550 fix just for the back glass if you really wanted to fix it. And I think by that point, most people are like, I can live with broken back glass. It's fine. It's not like,
right?
It's not
hurting.
Put
a case on it.
Yeah. Put a case on. It's not hurting my operation of the phone typically. So that's not that. It's good to see this change. But also, the back panel comes off and you have easier access to just about everything, like all the components. And I find that really interesting, too. Like, in general, it looks like iFixit, if you take a look at their videos and their photos, like, they remove the bottom screws, they're able to, like, you know, use the suction thing and get the screens off. But once you open it up, it's very easy to get in there and get to different components. They're just more visible, more reachable. And they gave it the highest score they've ever given an iPhone, which is kind of a big deal. What's interesting here is that the iPhone 14 Pro or the Pro Max that they also tore down doesn't have any of this.
No, yeah.
So
it was the basic iPhone 14 that got this redesign, whereas the Pro models are still kind of stuck to that older design. Apple did say it changed up some of the internal design of the Pro series a little bit, and I have the details, but they're kind of out of reach right now. It's a little bit on how they place the speakers and that sort of stuff. But yeah, not with the same enclosure.
Not super
difference.
Simple.
Yeah.
I do think, just like between us, like, do you guys think this is Apple responding to the whole, like, DIY self-repair trend out there? Like, they announced the plan to give you guides, give you parts, and let you order it too. Like, Sam, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think this is sort of Apple's responding to pressure, because even outside of the U.S., they're starting, governments are starting to be like, hey, we want to improve sustainability. And one of the big, ways you do that is you make things more repairable. And so I think this is sort of Apple getting out ahead of the curve. At the same time, this is also still kind of Apple being Apple, if you look at it, because, highest score ever. I think iFixit gave it a 7 out of 10, which is good, but, like, not exceptional. Mm-hmm. And one other thing that they mentioned in their teardown is that it looks like Apple is using software locks for some of these repair components. And they mentioned that even the back glass has a software lock on it. And that's actually just a really weird move, because it's like, you have this glass that has no circuit boards or anything in it, really, and that you still have to go into the software and, like, enable it officially. And so that's a really weird thing to do. And So it's like, on one hand, yes, the phone is more repairable, but on the other hand, now there's more steps and there's more a more complicated procedure for adding what should be a pretty straightforward repair.
This feels like when I need to get my toddler ready for school in the morning and she just like plays limp. And it's like, oh, you have to drag me to the door now.
So yes,
we are dragging Apple to the door of repairability and DIY fixing. Like, okay, components. But wah, I don't want to get rid of my software locks. Come on, guys. You have to use actual Apple components, and we're only going to make it so. I do feel like for the Face ID sensor, we've talked about this before. Like, it makes sense there to be like, hey, you got to use a real Face ID sensor. Like, we're not going to let you, like, mess around, because that's a great way to, like, hack a phone or steal somebody's, like, data. But the back glass? I don't think they need that.
Yeah, that's a weird choice for sure.
Mm-hmm. So you talked with Apple a lot around these phones, Sherlyn. Like, were they highlighting it in your briefings and stuff? Or were they like, oh yeah, by the way, more repairable?
Yeah, they did. So I mean, the iPhone 14, they focus is where this is more of a big deal. And then they were telling us, oh yeah, 12 megapixel sensor, bigger sensor and larger microns. So like the repairability part came at the end. It was more like, oh, you know, internal redesign, remove the back glass from the housing. And so now that brings, their wording is always very consistent, right? They're very scripted. They're very rehearsed. So the wording is more or less along the lines of like, oh, and this brings about two benefits. One, better repairability, and two, better heat dissipation. So it's clear this repairability issue is top of mind for them. And they're, you know, in the briefings that I have attended anyway, they usually are the first to say this is also a cost benefit to consumers, which is a good point. And I will say, and I know like we like to hate on Apple, and I do too, but in this case, they've managed to make this redesign feel like it's nothing different, right? Phones, like I said, feel exactly the same as the last generation. For better or worse, they feel exactly the same as the last generation. So
right, because I was going to say, it seems like some people were just expecting a little bit more. And it seems like Apple may have just like overhyped a little bit and then kind of under-delivered as far as like the, you know, the overall like improvements generation for generation for the 14.
Yeah, the regular model is not hugely improved. We've talked about this at length, but the 14 Pro, honestly, y'all,
so good.
I've switched over. I haven't converted my SIM yet.
Android queen has officially switched over.
Oh, my Pixel 6 Pro is like languishing in the background, especially because, and we'll get to this later.
No,
I'm
dynamic
sure.
Island on the Pixel 6 Pro.
No, I'm not. I don't care so much about that. It's more because lately I've been using the AirPods Pro 2, the 2022 model. We can talk about that in a little bit, but
we can. Yeah.
Once I got that going, it was like sayonara, Pixel 6 Pro.
One thing I want to mention, a couple of people have mentioned to me, like, they are now seeking out, like, used iPhone 13s or discounted iPhone 13s. Should they just hold off and go for the 14 now because of this repairability thing? I don't think that's worth it enough, unless you think you're either really clumsy or giving it to somebody who's clumsy and may need a lot of repairs. But in general, I would take that discount and put a case on it, baby. Like, put a screen protector on it. That's the best way to protect your devices right now. But Sherlyn, the AirPods Pro 2, you've been testing it. Billy Steele just reviewed it over at the main Engadget site. He seems to really like it. Score of 88, which is good. Sounds like a worthwhile improvement for him, despite having the same design, kind of so-so battery life. How are you liking them?
I am pretty impressed so far. I mean, I helped Billy with the review video, so that's also up on the Engadget YouTube channel now. It might be a little bit jarring because you hear Billy's beautiful drawl and accent in the background. Then you see me, like a city dweller, just like chomping along the streets or whatever. But
you really chomp along streets? Okay.
I did. Yeah, just like me, just pretending to look at my purse for the AirPods, and then I actually lost them, so I couldn't find it. Anyway, and it's me pretending to be in an iPod commercial, trying to like chill against the wall. So as I shot the video for him, I was reading his script and learning some things about what's new and what he liked and didn't. And one of the features that's new to the AirPods Pro is the touch-sensitive panel now on the stick. Now, Billy says, and Billy has such great lines in his review too. He says something like, oh, at this point, it would be, you know, too much probably to hope for Apple to do away with that stick butt design. I think he doesn't like it. I think for a lot of different people, it doesn't work very well. And so for them to place the touch-sensitive panel on the stick.
There you go. There you go.
I know. You would think it's like, hallelujah, finally touch controls, but they place them in a sort of awkward position, right? When I read the script, I was like, oh, okay, you can touch up and down. And before I read the script, I was not having an issue with the touch panel until Billy pointed out that, like, if you have to brace the stick with your thumb and then use your index finger to kind of go up and down to switch the volume.
You
and
can't
I was
just, like, lightly swipe easily.
You can, but depending on the fit for you. Like, for me, my right ear has no problem with me just using my index finger and no brace, just going up and down. But my left ear, the second I start jabbing at it with the looking for the touch controls, the thing starts trying to fall out of my ear. And so that's one of the issues that you're going to have with the touch controls on the AirPods Pro 2022.
But, I think that's why it was probably wasn't in the original version too. And people complained about it. But I have lived with those, with the Beats Fit Pro, other wireless earbuds that don't have volume controls. And like, unless you're exercising a lot, right, and your phone is far away or you don't have another way to control your volume, like, you also have voice commands to control volume, you know.
I love volume control on the phone, on the buds. I love, same, right, Sam? Like, because it's just so much more convenient. It's not just for exercising. I get it. Like, when I was on the treadmill a lot, it was just so much easier to, like, use that because sometimes some parts of songs are not as loud as they should be or whatever. But and we shot a clip of this. I don't know if it made it into the final review. But, like, for me, volume change is very important when I'm changing from indoors and outdoors, subway and up or whatever. You can use noise cancellation, sure, but I don't always want to use noise cancellation when I'm, you know, stepping in and out of these places. So it's nice. We were grateful that it came, but then the implementation is fine. It's not such a huge inconvenience to use your thumb to brace it. But I don't know, Sam. I mean, you seem like you might have some thoughts too.
Yeah, no, I think what you're kind of hitting on is, like, I think the platonic ideal of, like, earbuds is that you put your earbuds in and you never have to touch your phone again to adjust, like, your, you know, songs or audio or whatever. And so, like, I think you want to be able to, the core functions you want on an earbud touch control is, like, pause, play, skip, track, rewind, and then control audio. And then, ideally, you also want to be able to toggle, like, ANC on and off. And so I think, you know, manufacturers are trying to, like, figure out, like, a control system that makes sense. In Samsung, on the Galaxy Buds Pro 2, they have, like an experimental labs feature where they have, you know, the buds normally have, like, a touch-sensitive panel on the side, but they actually divided it in half so that the front part of the touch thing is what you use to adjust volume. And it's, like, it's still an experimental feature. And so, like, for me, like, I've been, like, learning how to use that, and it's, like, I think I like the idea of that more. And because there's no, like, stick on the Galaxy Buds, you don't have to worry about it, like, you know, like,
falling,
like, rearranging the fit, yeah, or, like, causing the earbuds to fall out.
Are you guys still annoyed by the stick? Because I feel like if you do want a fully, like, stick-free, you know, Apple experience, there's the Beats Fit Pro, which sound really good too. Sounded better than the original AirPods Pro. But the stick seems like you use that to have a better microphone experience, to have better call quality when you're actually talking to people. So I found at least the AirPods are better at that because of the stick, right?
I don't mind the stick. I've never minded the stick butt design. I even don't mind if they're not in ears, in the sense that it's a more flat butt, right? Like the basic AirPods. I'm very okay with that. I think Huawei actually made a version of them ages ago.
Of course they did. Yeah.
Of course. It's like a clone. And Huawei managed to have touch controls on those things, but they never would work because of wind interference, because my hair was in my ear.
Yeah.
So I get that touch controls on earbuds are a very tricky issue. To be clear, too, on the AirPods Pro 2022, you still have the squeeze controls, right? So you still squeeze the sticks twice to skip forward, once to pause, and three times. To go backwards, and long press for ANC or sound profile toggle. So there's still that. It's the touch controls are there purely at this point for volume control.
I feel like I have like bad memories from some Jabra like exercise headphones I've had, which had physical buttons, and sometimes you have to push it hard and it would hit your
ears. You hurt your ear canal with like trying to push it in, and like that was never a good word.
Never great. Anyway, AirPods Pro 2 sound good. How did you try the sort of like adjusted transparency mode, Trillin? Because that sounds interesting.
Yeah. So there's a lot of new features too, right? The adjusted transparency mode, you mean like the ambient, personalized ambient?
It kind of changes as you move from environments and stuff.
I didn't change that many environments, but I did see that. So a few things. One is I did set up personalized spatial audio, which uses sort of like a face ID setup method. It scans your head and then it scans your each ear through the phone's Face ID cameras and then creates like a profile for you. And I remember reading in Billy's review that he didn't really actually appreciate like the personalized version that the Apple came up with. I haven't spent enough time listening to like music before and after setting that up, because I actually really only did it for the video, because you kind of, I don't want to like redo it too many times. So that feature, I would say Billy doesn't seem to be super impressed by. Mm-hmm. And I'll
it's
get
also,
back to you.
That's not new to these earbuds, because on my Beats Fit Pro, you can also do the sort of like camera, like personalization stuff. And
interesting.
I think, yeah.
I wasn't aware of that. The other thing is that I thought was actually pretty cool is that you can use the mics on the AirPods Pro to suppress environmental noise that could hurt your hearing.
Yes, that cool.
That was very cool, because you also use it with Apple Watch to kind of see how it's in use, right? So like I was looking at the Apple Watch and putting some... there was no noise really around me in our office, but our video producer, Joel, was like, yeah. Like, we were just, like, making your noise around. And you can see that the decibels that it was detecting was, like, maybe 69 decibels when Joel was making, saying something. And then you can see how much the AirPods were sort of, like, minimizing what you hear. So it was like, oh, we're taking this down to 25 decibels instead of the 69 decibels it would otherwise be in your ear. Cool. Right? Like, I definitely didn't hear, like, Joel screaming in my ear, but I don't know if that was because there is a physical barrier, right? Or because the mics are that good, or the, you know, Apple system is that great.
A good thing is sort of like New York subway stuff, right? Because, like, trains are coming in, super loud, you hear all the wheels and everything, you go, and, like, I feel like if it can just automatically boost suppression for that, and then as you get in, it kind of chills. Because when I wear earbuds, certainly when I was in New York, like, I would just walk around with one earbud, basically. If I get in, I'm sitting in for a long train ride, then I do two earbuds, and I kind of like huddle up and keep my situational awareness. But normally, just one earbud because I want to hear what's happening. So
yeah,
if it works better for transparency mode, that's a big win. Yeah,
I think so. I mean, the transparency mode I've tested, I didn't test the like adapted or whatever transparency mode. I mean, it works pretty much the same as the Pixel Buds Pro's transparency mode, which is pretty effective. I can't tell you that there's a huge difference between the two when it comes to their noise cancellation and their noise transparency modes. I think that I was at like a very noisy street festival recently. Like it was the downtown Jersey City street festival. There's very loud music playing. That's one of those situations where you would appreciate a feature like the one that we just talked about, but I was around friends. Like you wouldn't, you know, like it's difficult for me to guess like what situations this would be useful in other than the subway scenario.
I feel like that's just being able to automatically do it is kind of the thing you want. So that's great. I'm glad Apple's doing that. I will say it's funny that my Beats Fit Pro right now, I love them so much. I've been using them like daily multiple times since I bought them like late last year, right? When they came out, the like seal between the wingtip and the bud just peeled off last week. Like they knew headphones were coming. They're like, sorry, bruh. I guess you got to get new ones. No, I'm going to crazy glue those suckers. I'm not going to move on.
Don't crazy glue your ear.
Not my ear, but certainly.
Yeah, just make sure it dries before you put them back in.
Oh, absolutely. Although, you know, that's true technology integration, right? Just you will always have an earbud on.
I'll say our live stream producer Julio says, you know, he uses his AirPods Pro to suppress noise when his neighbors mow the lawn. That's a good. Yeah, I don't think a lot
exactly.
of us.
I use it when I mow the lawn, like just.
Oh, look at that!
And I don't even have like a heavy. What is a lawn? What is grass? I mean, the lawn shouldn't exist. I should just have wildflowers on my front yard. I wish I could just do that. But my lawnmower is not super loud. But when I'm doing stuff outside, certainly leaf blower stuff, those things suck and they're really loud. So, using these things have been super helpful, even though I'm not in a city. Anything else you guys want to mention about this or the repairability of the iPhone 14 Pro? Because we can move on. We've got a lot of news this week.
Just the price of the AirPods Pro 2, right? It's $249, $250. And so what, same price as the last generation?
Same price as the last gen. The Beats Fit Pro came in at like $200. So that's also why I'm like, it is weird what is happening there, right? Is the Beats folks are completely separate from the AirPods and other audio engineering folks? Or are they just like... How does that work? How does that like workplace culture work? Like the Beats folks, okay, they get the new chips, they get like some new stuff over time, but they have to design their own speakers and drivers and everything. So it's all
Yeah, who knows with who Beats knows? Anymore? I also did want to flag the case now, the charging case for the AirPods Pro 2022 have their own speakers on board. They have a lanyard loop, but no lanyard is included when you buy the thing.
Well, then you're going to get a cute one from a vending machine, probably, right?
Yeah, for sure. Meantime, Mark Dell, one of our live stream viewers, asks, is Engadget going to do a rundown of the top lanyards for the AirPods Pro 2022? I say you tell us if you want us to. I don't know, whatever
you find, like that's how lanyards work.
Yeah, just whatever lanyard
whatever
you want.
Junk you find anywhere.
I did use the U1 chip in the case, which is an ultra wideband chip, and that allows for very precise location via Find My in your iPhone. I did try that feature out. Like, I had a video producer hide the AirPods Pro in an office for me, uh-huh. and then I was like, okay, I'm gonna turn on Find My to look for that. And it really, I found it in 5 seconds flat.
Did it work as well as AirTags? Like, does it give you the directional arrow? And
yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So I was very impressed. So you're never gonna lose your AirPods. Hopefully, you get these. I don't know.
Now, we'll just see. put that on the freaking Apple TV remote. Like, put the freaking AirTags on the remote. I keep losing it. Okay, good to hear that the AirPods Pro 2 are cool. And hey, good news for the iPhone 14 if you buy it for somebody. If it breaks, like, maybe it'll be easier to repair. That's a good thing for everybody. Go check out our review of the AirPods Pro 2 and check out all of Sherlyn's reviews. She's been driving herself crazy reviewing all this Apple stuff. We've got one more thing we'll mention in what you're working on. But for now, let's move on to some other news. This was a pretty big week for NVIDIA. This was NVIDIA's GTC event, where they typically show off all their new technology, but this was also the week they decided to show off their new 4000 series cards, the 4090, the RTX 4090, which is going to be $1,600, and the RTX 4080. Confusingly, there are two of those. There's a $900 one with 12 gigabytes of RAM and a $1,200 one with 16 gigabytes of RAM. Very curious about that distinction and why they're both called 4080, and we'll dive into it. But hey, new GPUs, it is a weird thing to see from NVIDIA right now, because it feels like, honestly, it feels like the 3000 series cards just got here, or at least we just learned about the Ti versions, which are slightly faster. It feels like we're still recovering from the crazy, like, crypto mining wave that drove GPU prices way up. That has slowed down. The prices are back to normal. Stock is out there. But we did hear, like, NVIDIA during this event, like, I was hearing some Q&As with Jensen Huang, and he said, like, he admitted they made too many 3000 series cards. You know, like, that was a big issue for them. So my question is now, like, okay, people have wanted 3000 series cards forever. These cards are here now. They're more expensive. They get you more. They could do a lot more. They're certainly better with ray tracing and better for faster frame rates in general. My question is, like, does anybody actually need these? Sam, I know you're a fellow, like, PC enthusiast. Like, what are you thinking about these cards? Do you want, like, just full unfettered 4K ray tracing and no compromise, right? Is that what you're aiming for? Or?
Yeah, it's so hard because, like, you know, the GPU market has been on such, like, a roller coaster, because, like, for a long time you couldn't get any. And then, just recently, there's, like, very available, like, you know, you can get them for retail prices. And then as soon as that happens, now there's a new generation of cards to worry about. And I think it's really, like, on a certain level, it really brings into a question, is, like, you have to figure out what kind of gamer you are, because, you know, especially with the new 4000 series cards, one of the big advantages is, like, significantly better ray tracing performance. I said, like, upwards of 100%, or, like, twice the ray tracing performance compared to last generation. But you got to factor in, it's like, do the games that I play actually benefit from ray tracing? Because if you're playing Counter-Strike, you know, you're not going to see anything. But so it really depends on what kind of games you're playing. And then on top of that, you know, you mentioned, like, there's the 4080 16 gig and the 4080 12 gig. And there's been some, you know, some heated discussion online about that, because
they're very, like, different cards. Very different.
Exactly. So I have the specs right here. And so the 4090 has 16,000 CUDA cores. The 4080 16 gig has 9,700 CUDA cores. And the 4080 12 gig has 7,600 CUDA cores. So that's actually a pretty big difference. In terms of, like, it's not just the VRAM that's different on these cards. And so you really have to, like,
And also, and so like, smaller memory bandwidth, too, I'm seeing on the full specs. 192-bit on the 4080 12-gigabit, or 12-gigabyte, 256-bit on the 4080 16-gigabyte. These are different cards. What?
Very different cards. And now there's some speculation. It's like, oh, is the 4080 12-gig, was that really just like a 4070 or even like a 4060 that they kind of, you know, rebranded or renamed so that it fits in better with this lineup? And like we were talking about this yesterday. It's like, oh, they could have called like the 4080 16-gig the 4080 Ti, but that would also throw off, you know, NVIDIA's traditional naming scheme of saving the Ti versions for like a mid-cycle refresh.
Yeah, for a couple of years from now, yeah.
And so it's all very interesting, and then you just have the pricing, and it's more complicated than ever to like think about if you want to upgrade or not.
It's so weird too, and especially because first of all, let me put this out there for people who aren't following this market. Typically, the 70 cards are like the ones that a lot of enthusiasts aim for because they tend to be
mainstream. The mainstream choice, yeah.
Well, I would say so. Mainstream is like typically the 60 series, right? Like if you're if you just want like good gameplay, you'll get a 60 series card and some sort of thing. If you're an enthusiast who cares about PC gaming, most people just aim for the 70 cards and maybe overclock, you know, and maybe like try to eke out more performance from that because the 80s are usually such a huge price jump, like almost twice as much or a significant amount typically. Now, there is no 4070. Maybe there likely will be down the line, but it does seem like this price gulf and this spec difference does feel like they're two separate cards, and NVIDIA is just trying to justify the much, much higher price at this point. Because yeah.
And there was also a Q&A with media yesterday, and so in the Q&A, Jensen, the CEO of NVIDIA, was saying, oh, the prices of the times of falling GPU prices are a thing of the past, which is kind of scary for people who like fancy new hardware, because it's just saying this like, oh, the prices for the flagship stuff are just going to keep going up from now until forever. And so that's definitely a little concerning. But there is, you know, some, you know, background to this, because apparently TSMC is charging a little bit more for their wafer production. So obviously that's getting passed on to the consumer, which sucks, but you know, that's, you know, business, I guess.
And this is a new process too, right? Like an entirely new, smaller process for them. So
yeah, it's supposedly on TSMC's 4-nanometer process, but there is, you know, I think it's only like a half a generation jump up from the 5-nanometer process they were using before. But yeah.
My main question here is like, who needs these? If you're somebody right now, if you've been like holding off on the GPU market and you just didn't jump in, it kind of depends where you are, right? Like, I don't think these are worthwhile upgrades from the 3000 cards. Maybe if you're stuck with a 2000 or a 1000, you know, series card, especially if you stuck with the GTX like 1070 or 1080 for several years now, then yeah, maybe you just want to go all the way as much as you can. But I also expect we're going to see some pretty good deals on the 3000 series cards left. The 3070 is still a killer card. The 3080 is going to take a huge price dip because of this thing. I haven't like seen things get reflected yet, but I don't know. If you're going to spend that money, maybe it does make more sense to go for the $900 4080 rather than spending $500 or $600 on a 3080, you know, if it ever gets to that price. This is just a weird point. Yeah.
My desktop at home, I'm currently using a 2080, and I'm right on that edge of like, should I upgrade? Should I not? And like, I'm almost like at a point where it's like, maybe I try to hold out for like the mid-cycle refresh, just because it's like, you know, I wasn't able to get a new GPU during the pandemic, and like now that I can get a 3000 series card, like I'm either going to wait for the prices on those to fall, or you know, see how everything else shakes out. Especially, you know, once we get a chance to actually test these things and see what the actual performance is like.
Mm-hmm. It feels like we're hitting the plateau, right, of PC gaming performance. It's like, yeah, when it comes to like traditional rasterized games, getting hot, fast frame rates, super easy with most games these days. It's when you enable things like ray tracing and other fun effects where, oh, you need a lot more processing power. And at the end of the day, ray tracing just looks very nice, but it's not going to functionally make your gaming better, I guess. So this is should we be caring so much about these graphics? Look at Nintendo and the Switch and like how much they've been able to eke out of a freaking 5-year-old mobile, you know, CPU. It seems like we're in a weird place, and I don't know if people are actually going to jump on these cards as much as the last bit. Sherlyn, does any of this mean anything to you? I mean, you follow the chip industry, but This is like high-end gaming nerd stuff. And
well, yeah. you know when you said who needs to get these, I was thinking Julio, because our live stream producer just earlier today was like having some issues with like graphics card struggles, right? And so I was like, okay, so, and I'm pretty sure Julio uses a fairly recent model of the 3000 series, probably. Julio, correct me
Julio
if I'm wrong.
Julio has a 3080 Ti, yeah,
right, a 3080 Ti, so like, yeah, that one's already a pretty serious, beefy graphics card, and probably Julio, someone with Julio's workflow, where he's managing several different video streams and then running graphics and putting that all out to YouTube at once, could probably, you know, benefit from getting a new graphics card, one of the 4000 series. But you're right that, like, you know, beyond these very intensive workloads that, you know, Julio does for work, like if you're a YouTube streamer and you're playing like games while streaming your own feed, I guess, to Twitch or whatever, probably, right? I don't know how much you could do that. Then
you're almost like CPU bound, right? And then like you've got other things to deal with. And if you're a real streamer, you're gonna have two computers, and you're gonna game on one and pipe that video into the other one and have the other one be your broadcast computer. So, you know, I don't fully know. I guess this stuff, like, hey, if you have a 120 hertz monitor, you know, or more, certainly more, if you have a 360 hertz, or they're going to get faster and faster, and you want to like pump all those frames in, then sure, these are going to help. And NVIDIA also talked about something else that is kind of interesting. They announced DLSS 3, which is the third version of their, like, I forget, super sampling. They're super sampling tech. But previously, DLSS was all about saying, like, hey, we will render these frames at 1080p, and we will use our AI tools and our AI processors to spit out a much higher quality, maybe like a 4K level image, by kind of like estimating what that increased resolution would look like. DLSS 3 is interesting because they're just straight up frame interpolating. Like, they are just, rather than just like making the edges and things look better, they're adding whole new frames of gameplay in there, which starts to sound like the motion smoothing stuff we don't like in TVs. We don't like fake frames. So, but they're talking about that as a way to get frame rates up while you're enabling ray tracing gameplay. And they showed off like some cool things, like some games actually took a big jump. They showed off Cyberpunk, and when they enabled all this stuff, like, frame rates jumped quite a bit. So that could be useful, I guess. Is it worth the cost of, you know, I don't know, near $1,000 just for that? Especially if you have a 3080, that I don't know. So we're kind of at a crossroads. I'm looking forward to testing these cards. Unfortunately, I don't think we will be testing the 4090. NVIDIA, no matter how much I beg, we rarely get the 90 series cards. But hopefully, I'm aiming to at least get the two 4080s and do some good benchmarking between them to get a sense of like how those things perform. But hey, guys, like if you have a 3000 series card, just stick with it. Love what you've got.
Love the one you have.
People were talking about, I saw Daniel Diaz in our chat room mention, like, they saw a deal saying an RTX 3070 combined with a 27-inch Quad HD 165 hertz monitor for $600
on Newegg.
That's a great deal.
Yeah,
dude, that stuff like that. I am a very pragmatic and cheap buyer when it comes to tech. So
love
what you can get. Learn to like eke out the most performance of these things, because at the high end, you are paying for NVIDIA's technology testbed, basically, because most games aren't going to take advantage of this stuff immediately. Those 30 series cards are going to drop in price, and that's going to be a big, big deal. Another thing is they announced that Portal's getting, they did a mod for Portal to bring RTX ray tracing to Portal, and that looks pretty cool. Did you guys see the videos of that?
Sorry, I was in Apple land.
Yeah,
no, I was watching the trailer, and then my wife heard the Portal music, and she's like, wait, there's Portal news? And she got like really excited. Yeah.
No, well, the cake is still a lie, but I guess these frames are not a lie. This realistic lighting is not a lie. That's what's happening. It's Portal with like the edges of the portals reflect off the environment. Surfaces are reflective. It just looks really nice. And it shows, like, if you look at the trailer for this thing, it shows off like the sort of difference just having more realistic lighting makes for a game. It makes it gives more depth to the image. I played a bit of the Quake 2 RTX thing, and even that like old game looked pretty great once you started adding some realistic lighting. So these things do show like what the difference is with RTX. It's just like not, it's not world-changing. It's more like it's the sort of way like HDR makes things look a little nicer in movies and games too. So I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see what happens. I'm not super enthusiastic about these cards, but I am enthusiastic about the price drops that are clearly coming. So if you've been waiting, folks, now's the time to get a 3000 series card. Let's move on to some other news. And there's a bunch of hacks going on, specifically Grand Theft Auto 6. I don't know if you guys were following this, but over the weekend, I just woke up and saw, like, there was massive leak, 90 videos, source code from Grand Theft Auto 6 just out there. And for those who don't know, like, Rockstar typically keeps this stuff all close to the vest. Like, they don't typically reveal a lot of this stuff. The only stuff we've heard about this game so far is from reporting from Jason Schreier at Bloomberg. So to have videos out there and, like, a full sense of what this game is just pretty wild. The story we're hearing now, and this hasn't been super confirmed, but it likely was by the same hacker who accomplished the massive Uber hack last week. And let me see here. And that group is Lapsus dollar sign. I don't know how do you read that? Lapsus dollar sign. But both of these things, the GTA 6 in particular is interesting because it's like, there were also rumors that they were trying to work with Rockstar to maybe get paid to return some of the stuff, which is like, oh, you're just getting to extortion territory now. You want to go straight to jail. Thoughts on this? And we will not be showing this footage. It is out there, but respectfully, like, yeah, we don't want to keep broadcasting this stuff. I took a look at like a couple seconds just to see like what it looked like. It looks like Grand Theft Auto.
I just have one thing to say. I posit that the name is pronounced Lapsus Cha-ching.
Cha-ching. Sure.
Anyway.
Lapsus Cash.
Thank you.
Lapsus dollar sign. Yeah.
I think the sad thing is I just feel bad for the developers because this is really, really early footage. And so some of the people who, like, you know, aren't really in the game industry, they see early development footage is like, oh, this game looks like crap. And then the developers have to hear this and it's like, well, GTA 6 is doomed. And it's like, y'all, this is like early footage. The textures aren't finished. Like the graphics aren't finished.
Reportedly, so it's from like a 2019 build and this game is still like 2 years away. So old.
Yeah, there's no announcement. There's like no release date, not even like a release window for this game. And so like anything that you're seeing here is like you can't really take it too seriously. And so I feel bad because it really bums out. You hear stories about the developers, like, you know, it really bums them out that like people are seeing a game that isn't really representative of what their final product is going to be. And so it just sucks on that end.
There was a good trend of developers kind of showing off early hardware of their own games in solidarity for this. So specifically, I really liked the folks behind Control were showing off like a really early build of that game and how rough that looked and how simplistic. But also, if you squint, you could kind of see where that game was going and what they were aiming for. And that's how development works. Like games don't really take shape until the very end. Like once all the art assets and everything are done, it does make me sad about the gamer culture or the gamers who just want to consume and like criticize everything and have no idea what's really happening. Yeah.
I've been seeing memes all over Reddit about this. And one of the more repeated ones is on the left, you have GTA 6 leak haters complaining that it doesn't look good. And then on the right, you have GTA 6 leak fans or something going, well, at least it's in the works. Like, you know, there's always two ways to see it. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I think this is a story of like, yeah, the people who are going to hate are just going to hate. And, you know, we know what to expect.
I would say if you're listening to this and you saw that footage, because it is everywhere, and you feel disappointed by it and you want to know like how games are made, I want to shout out the work by the NoClip team, the NoClip documentary team, who does great work doing behind the scenes coverage of game stuff. They have a Patreon and stuff. Like, I am really happy to support them because those folks have been making gaming videos and gaming like journalism for years, for over a decade at this point. So check out NoClip. They're on YouTube and you could get some really good behind the scenes action. The stuff they did around the Dishonored games I thought was like really fascinating. That's one of my favorite series right now. Anything else you guys want to add about this particular hack?
There was another leak, another exploit by Lapsus Cha-ching, right?
Lapsus, I mean, the Uber thing was last week, but what we're hearing is like, yeah, the revelation that was Lapsus Cha-ching was more recent. And that was also the group behind Microsoft and T-Mobile's recent attacks. And the Uber thing is kind of weird because they basically got fully inside Uber's internal systems and put up an expletive webpage for all Uber employees when they tried to browse their like little intranet, and they got into their Slack and stuff, and it was bad.
My favorite thing that I saw on the internet after that was like Uber posting job postings for security engineers in New York, Georgia, whatever. Like they were just like immediately hiring security engineers.
Oh crap, our security. What happened apparently from what I've read is that the contractor that was hacked, they had two-factor authentication. They had a check-in. They received a thing and just accepted it. The folks, if you have two-factor, if you're using like we use one platform that you have to click approve when you try to log into our sites, and if you're getting weird things, don't click approve. Tell your IT department, like, come on. The IT guy in me is like just cringing at all this stuff because so many of these hacks are just simple things that people could do. This is not like new technology. This is nothing new. It's just social engineering and finding all the little holes you can get. So anyway, we will see more details from the GTA 6 hack at some point, and the Uber hack. Like that story is not done. Let's move on to some like quick other stories. I wrote up the Windows 11 2022 review. Let me just see here. Windows 11's 2022 update just landed this week, but this is a really quick update. We're about a year after the launch of Windows 11. And typically like this is when you get like major new features and stuff. This particular update really is just about rebuilding the Windows update system. So it's an update to get more updates. If that's at all confusing, there are some new things coming eventually, which actually didn't launch this week. In October, you'll get tabs on the File Explorer. You'll get some other new types of features. The Clipchamp video editor is in there. Microsoft bought them last year, but no major changes. Just kind of like a, hey, Windows 11 is still going strong, and this update is going to make like your Windows updates easier. They're going to be smaller, and they're going to be easier to install down the line. And Microsoft also wants to add bigger features into Windows updates rather than the annual like major updates for things. So that's a good thing for Windows fans. You're going to get a little more start menu customization. You're going to be able to like add more pins or more personalized apps or more like recommendations for apps. So that's cool. But beyond that, it's still Windows 11. How are you guys feeling about this OS? Like, Sherlyn, have you ever, I don't even think you've had to live with Windows 11 much, have you?
I have used it on some, I believe my current laptop uses Windows 11. Maybe not the latest version of Windows 11.
Your work
11.
Laptop or another one?
The one that I use for work is not the work. The work laptop is a Mac. Ugh. But the thing about the tabs in File Explorer, right? We've heard about that for a while now. So you know, I feel like that's not super news.
I mean, it hasn't been here. So the way Windows works is we typically hear about features as they're rolling out to insiders and preview builds and things like that. But to general users, they're not here. So I've been running File Explorer tabs for a while. I really like them just because I tend to have a lot of Explorer windows. I'm moving stuff all around. You can still do that, but the tabs help to like consolidate things a little bit. But yeah, it's nice. Nothing groundbreaking. This is the thing where if you were a Windows 10 user who was like waiting to update before Microsoft like got a lot of the you know bugs ironed out, I feel like now is a good time to make that jump. That's a good thing.
This is like, it feels like the refinement pass of like, you know, following up from the original release last year.
It is funny.
I saw they're improving the accuracy of like general Windows 11 search, which I'll be very curious to see how that, because it was like Windows 11 search is just like so hit or miss. So I'll be interested to see if that, how much that changes things. And it's like sad for me because like I can't upgrade my desktop because I'm using an older Intel chip, and so I have no like realistic.
How old is your chip?
It's a 7th gen Intel, so
you could still do an ISO install. You could still just
It's just that means I gotta like take my whole computer offline for a while, and I don't really want to.
It's not worth it. Like, hey folks, if you like Windows 10 right now and you're good, your system is good, just stick with that for a while. There are some cool new features coming to Windows 11 for gamers, like there's a new controller bar to make it easier to move things around, and you can also like run games windowed and still have HDR, auto HDR, and like variable refresh rates going. So that's kind of cool. Typically, you have to like full screen for that. So those are cool things, but if you're good with Windows 10, you're fine. Microsoft is still going to support it for several years, so We're good for a while. I just wanted to shout that thing out. Sherlyn, you were excited about this new cheap Chromecast.
Wow. With the words there. I mean, but it is true. This is a new Chromecast.
Yeah.
New Chromecast, according to Julio, was like, El Cheapo. Okay. It's $30. It's the Chromecast with Google TV, but HD. So the Chromecast with Google TV, when Google launched it, I want to say last year, 2 years ago, with the new interface and everything, that was 4K. I believe it sold for closer to $50. And this time you're getting a $30 version, which, yeah, it seems like just really the main difference here is that it's like a lower res and it's cheaper. But you have to think about like the households across the world. Not everyone's on a 4K TV.
No, sure.
And a device like a Chromecast is designed for someone who's not already on a smart TV. It's designed to like turn your older monitors maybe, right? Into something that you can use for, you know, your security camera streams.
Well, this one has the remote too, right? So you're not just casting from your phone. Like you
right.
It's actually the exact same design as the previous one. Like same remote, same dongle, everything.
That's cool.
Yeah, everything is really, everything's the same except for the 4K and some Dolby Atmos support missing from the HD version. And to kind of visibly tell them apart, there's like some etching on the device itself so you can see 4K or
look
HD
really
and then and there's no different color options, right? The HD version only comes in what they call snow, which is like white. And then, you know, with the 4K version, you get pink and blue versions as well. So for me, this is more like we're returning to the original Chromecast idea, the concept of this dongle that turns any TV into a smart TV for cheap, right? The original Chromecast retailed for $35. This is cheaper than that, and it does more. So for me, like, I just thought that was interesting. Also, I just love Chromecast, so,
Chromecast is cool. It's cool when it actually works. What's weird is that this one is 1080p, but also supports HDR.
Yeah.
There are no 1080p HDR TVs.
That is kind of weird, yeah.
That is weird. Yeah. Maybe it's just, like, the chip level, like, the chip they scaled down for this thing just kind of had HDR, and they just didn't turn it off. I don't know. I always liked having a Chromebook or a really cheap Roku to take to like hotels when I traveled, and you go to Airbnbs and stuff, like, you have an easy way to access all your content, so that seems cool. And yeah, a lot of people still have 1080p TVs. I will say though, like if you need a Chromecast and you have a 1080p TV and you plan to upgrade your TV eventually, like maybe just get the 4K one. Maybe just like, I don't know. Like eventually you may want to be able to use this on a 4K set or do more with it. But it's cool that this exists. Roku has had super cheap, versions of their streaming boxes around for a while. So this is mainly competing with that. Yeah.
Declan Flynn in the chat says this is the Pixel 6a of Chromecasts, which, good point.
That's not inaccurate. Yeah.
Yeah. A very good analogy.
Okay. Cheap Chromecast. It is out. Good to see there. Would you pay $350 for a cloud gaming handheld from Logitech? $350. That is the price of Nintendo Switch Pro. A Switch OLED, not a Switch Pro. $350.
I was so cheap. I only paid $200 for my Switch second gen, I think. Uh-huh. Yeah. So.
We've seen this device leaked quite a bit, but basically it is a little handheld. It looks like a Switch, developed together by Logitech and Tencent, which is interesting too, which makes me think like it's really more meant for like, okay, in China and other countries where maybe cloud gaming is more of a thing. But yeah, this thing will be able to directly hook into GeForce Now. You'll be able to use your Steam. If you have a Steam PC, gaming PC, you could stream locally from within your home to it. It's cool. 1080p up to 60 frames per second. It's a 7-inch touchscreen. It's a basically.
I'm sorry. Did you say 16?
60.
Okay.
I would not say 60.
That's very low.
Yeah,
okay,
that's very low. It is basically a little Android thing. I would compare this to maybe the Steam Deck, but also the Switch itself, right? The Steam Deck. What is the cheapest one? It's like 400.
450.
450. Right. What are you doing, Logitech? When I heard about this thing, it was like, maybe if it's $200, sure. That's a great idea. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think you got to give me more for the money because this thing only plays Steam games. So, like, not only do you have to factor in, like, the cost of, like, your monthly, like, Xbox Game Pass Ultimate sub or, like, Stadia or whatever. You know, it's like you always need a wireless connection. And so like you either like have to tether or like, have some sort of Wi-Fi available. And so this really brings into the question. It's like, has cloud gaming reached a point where people are so comfortable with cloud gaming that they're okay getting a thing that cannot play games locally at all? And that's a point where I'm not quite there yet.
It depends on where you live, or like if you live in a home, for kids too, like, okay, a cloud gaming thing where they can't screw up the game cartridges or something, right? Where,
yeah, yeah.
But it has to be cheaper. It has to be cheaper. It has to be like $250, $200. When the Steam Deck, which admittedly is a lot bigger, that is a huge device. And this, I think one benefit of this thing is that it's supposed to be pretty light. It's slightly heavier than the Switch. It's 463 grams. The Switch is 398 grams. The Steam Deck is, that's about like less than a pound for both of these things. The Steam Deck is straight up 1.5 pounds. So it's a big boy. It's a big honking thing, but it runs games locally. It has power locally. You can both stream games and play games like right from the system if you're not online. So I don't know what Logitech is doing here. Or at least this price.
Well, and the other thing is like, yeah, like what are you going to do if you take this thing on a plane?
You're screwed.
Like, is plane Wi-Fi going to be able to like,
no.
Like not carry your cloud gaming? No, like,
no.
And so
can you download games? You can't download games.
From what it looks like, it has a Snapdragon 720G, has 4 gigabytes of RAM, 64 gigabytes of storage with expandable stuff. I don't believe you can play. Are they even allowing like Android games to play in this thing locally?
I wasn't clear on that, but like,
I don't see good GPU stuff here, so probably not.
So really low, like not great spec handheld console for $350. And then if you want to take it on the plane, you really have to play games in the cloud.
No, you're screwed.
Get it?
This is not a plane. This is not a plane system.
Clouds. It's clouds. Get it?
What's also funny is that you can you can hack your Switch to play cloud games too, which I have an old Switch here since I upgraded to the OLED, like a dum-dum, which I'm just going to mess with at some point. I like Logitech. I like Logitech jumping into new things, and this is a unique idea. But the goal now is to make like a little device that can do everything, right? And Nintendo started that. There are a lot of like cheap little handhelds from China, which can play all sorts of emulated games, and the Steam Deck is like really pushing it forward. This is like, what are we doing? I don't know what in this hardware makes it cost $350. We shall see. Any more thoughts here, Sherlyn? Like, would you rather you have a Switch? Would you at all be intrigued with this? Or like, you can cloud game on your Switch with some games. Like, some AAA games can be played over the cloud. Have you tried that yet?
Nope. I think I'd be more curious about the Steam Deck. The Steam Deck seems more like the device I should get if I were to go that way.
I would love to see you hold a Steam Deck, yes.
I know. I hear it's not... Yeah, Jess and I were talking. I want, no, you know what I want is that cranky one.
The cranky one, the Playdate.
Thank you.
I have an order for the Playdate. I don't know where it is, but I do want to touch the crank. Should be fun. I want to play games with the crank.
It's cute.
It's very cute. Final quick story. Twitch is banning major gambling websites in October. And this is a whole long story that came about after one Twitch user basically admitted to scamming up to over $200,000 from followers and friends to feed his online gambling addiction. So it's a whole thing. Some of the streamers, including Pokimane and Devin Nash, basically said like they got to do something about this. They threatened to boycott on Christmas week if Twitch doesn't ban gambling streams and sponsorship. So the company has decided to deal with that. How do you guys feel about Twitch and gambling?
I mean, I think this is a kind of necessary move that they have to make because the gambling thing has been rampant on Twitch for a long time. Like back in the day, they used to do like the gambling skins for like CSGO gun skins and stuff like that. And so they just got a crackdown on just like, it was kind of like a Wild Wild West, like free for all. And I think they were actually pretty specific about certain sites that are being banned. And they said, like, hey, we're going to revisit this list in the future in case, like, more, you know, situations pop up. And so it's like, you know, Twitch has always, especially Twitch, has had, like, a bad reputation for a long time about, like, just rules being implemented but not being enforced. And so it's good to see them take a little bit of action in order to, like, hey, we're putting our foot down. The stuff was getting out of control. There's got to be a limit somewhere.
And it's potentially dangerous for people too. Like if you get really into this stuff, you can lose a lot of money. It can cause you to do crazy things. The sites,
right? And people were donating money so they could, you know, see people spend money. And it's like you don't know what these people's financial situations are like and all that.
It's just rough. Gambling for entertainment. I don't quite know about that. The sites. Yeah, go ahead.
it's kind of the way things are headed, right? Because gambling apps and gambling, like being legal now, the increasing legality of gambling everywhere is going to make it a big thing. So I think we're seeing the first of like tech streaming companies or other such, like Yahoo has a gambling app, I think, coming up, right? Our parent company. So I think people see the potential to make a lot of money from this. And therefore, also people see potentially losing a lot of money from this, and they're kind of worried. And I would love to see how other streaming services, like maybe YouTube or something like that, react to this in future, because it's gonna happen. We're just bracing for it.
It's like, what is the motivation for people to stream this stuff? Like, ultimately, not a great thing. And if you gather a big of Twitch audience or YouTube gaming audience or something, and you're, it could be destructive to you or to your fans or people donating money. So anyway, the sites being banned include some of the most well-known ones like Stake.com, Rollbit, Duelbits, and Rubit. .com. I've never heard of these sites, but okay.
I mean, neither. Yeah.
Awesome. I think some of these sites are also crypto gambling sites as well.
Love it.
So the best parts of the internet all coming together. Fantastic.
It is funny. I did see some criticism here that Twitch was basically super fast to react to this. Whereas Twitch has a lot of other issues around abuse and audience abuse against creators and creators of color and women actually streaming games creators. And trans creators and has done much less to kind of help protect those folks. But when it comes to gambling or big money, or when Pokimane is like, I'm going to boycott when it's a threat to their pocketbooks, then they immediately react. That is kind of funny. I hope Twitch like does more to actually protect its users. We'll be keeping an eye on this story for sure. Let's move on to what we've been working on. I'm doing a bunch of stuff, guys. There's too much going on right now. I'm testing some of the new AMD chips. I'm basically going to be rebuilding my computer soon, so that's going to be happening. I have a bunch of embargoed stuff over the next few weeks, so you know, keep an eye out. We're all super busy. Sherlyn, what's up with you?
I have the Apple Watch Ultra We are
finally
testing it. Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, it's a chunker of a watch, but it feels comfortable. This is, I have the yellow loop on right now. The
Pikachu yellow.
Yeah.
Okay. Pikachu yellow. I also received a different, like a Velcro-ier loop, the other one that they introduced. I'm wearing the yellow one right now just because it's Pikachu yellow. You're right. My Game Boy was this color. But the case itself is, I don't think there's different colors. They're all this silvery, is it titanium? I forget. And with the orange action buttons on them. So anyway, I'll be testing this out, taking it upstate on a little trip, like a hikey thing. Setting waypoints and tracking back.
Have you guys seen that show Alone on Netflix? We're just gonna
leave
Sherlyn alone in the middle of the woods and see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be perfect. I can't wait to be left alone. I need
the behind the scenes on this hikey thing.
I really will be doing some behind the scenes. Yeah,
you're gonna walk 3 feet into the forest, freak out because there's a bug, and then that's gonna be the end of the video.
Is that a rat?
I'll be like, oh my god, if there's a rat, I will be very pissed. If there's a lantern fly, I will be extremely pissed. But
those are everywhere. Yeah,
those are everywhere. So there's that. I'm also still finishing up our full reviews of the Apple Watch SE, the Apple Watch Series 8, and then we have other devices coming through that are also wearables that I can't talk about yet. And then we have several upcoming events, like next week we're all on deck for certain events, and then the week after we've got, you know, prepping for Google and all of that stuff. Y'all, I can't catch a break.
Google, Microsoft, and then exactly. AMD was real cheeky about announcing their next event in November for their new RDNA 3 stuff.
I like how
CJ by steps in the chat is like, I want to steal Sherlyn's watch, sorry, no.
It really does look like you're walking around like a big steal me sign, you know. It's I guess we'll see what happens with these watches.
You can try. I will punch the watch and then I might punch something else. We'll see.
Sam, what's up? What are you working on?
I'm reviewing the MSI Stealth 15M right now. It's, you know, 15-inch, like kind of thin and light gaming PC. And then, you know, definitely prepping for Google and Microsoft, which is also having a Surface event that they just announced. It's like, it's busy time of the year again.
Busy time. It doesn't really end is the thing. Like, we're going to be busy for a while, and then we're going to be straight into like, oh, we're now preparing for CES. We're going to be... There's so much happening, but hey, it feels like things are a little back to normal too. Like, we are thinking about CES plans. We are seeing all these products come out. Less delays from people. We're still seeing delays from game developers and stuff, but in general, it seems like the tech industry is ready to wind back up. So it means we're all busy.
I had my first official meeting request for CES. I'm like too soon, no. But I'll listen.
Oh, man.
I also want to shout out that I didn't get to cover this in person, but the Peloton Row is something that got introduced this week. I was invited to go see in person, but it coincided with, I think, one of the days I had to do an Apple shoot or something like that, so I couldn't make it, but I see coverage on other websites. I also wanted to point out that a rowing machine by Peloton isn't necessarily like our core coverage, because I feel like most people, this is a $3,300 rowing machine you would buy in your fancy-ass mansion where you have an exercise room.
We cover probably. Pelotons, unfortunately. So
we do cover Pelotons, this
that's,
is true, yeah. But this is not the highest priority on my list, because when I use a rowing machine, I just use whatever's at my gym.
I kind of want to use a rowing machine. They look cool. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you think so. I thought they would be easier than they, like, then I realized a trainer was telling me, you're doing it wrong. Then I was like, oh, he was like, do it this way. I was like, oh my God, it's harder. So much harder. Anyway.
Okay, let's round and gather. We've got some stuff to highlight. Matt Smith reviewed iOS 16. He gave it a really high score. Calls it Apple opens lock screen, and that is really the big thing. Like, the widgets on the lock screen, I think, are pretty great. I'm digging iOS 16 quite a bit. Another shout out for Billy's AirPods Pro 2 review. Or they're still just AirPods Pro, but Gen 2 technically. Yep, that's it. We've got a lot of stuff. Go check out the main site. We've done a lot of coverage from all the game streams and stuff that happened. There's still some leftover stuff from Tokyo Game
Show.
Sam
also reviewed the Asus folding.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I took that on my vacation when I was traveling throughout Europe. And it was surprisingly durable. I was like, especially when you have like a flexible screen that's that big, you kind of want to like, oh God, like treat it with like kid gloves. And I was like, I threw it in my backpack, like threw it in the airplane bins and stuff like that. It was actually surprisingly good. And, you know, I was able to like watch like She-Hulk with my wife, like in the terminal, like waiting for our plane. It was like, it was actually kind of
wait,
like,
how were you watching
solid.
It? Did you like?
We watched it in tablet mode. So this is like this big screen.
Wow.
And we were sharing it. So like half of it was on my lap, half of it was on her lap. And it's like, there's like huge letter boxes and it's like, it's like awkward, but
were people
I
looking
like
at
having
you like what the hell is going on here?
We got a couple.
What kind
few
of an
stairs,
iPad
like,
is this?
Yeah, people like it wasn't like it was not computing that like this thing was bending in half.
Are they just holding a monitor in their lap? What is happening?
And I should also mention I got searched like that thing got inspected heavily going through customs twice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. So, yeah, they're like screens shouldn't move. What timeline are you from?
Right.
Are you
the
future?
The TSA did not understand.
Amazing. So check out Sam's review of that thing that was published this week, I believe. Yes.
Yes. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. As always, Sherlyn has a surprise for us, and I am ready to be disappointed. Please.
Sure. I don't know. I don't know that you will like this, either of you.
This feels like every week when we start.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I've been watching The Imperfects on Netflix.
I don't. Which one is that?
Tell us more.
Yeah.
The Imperfects is, I know none of the actors' names. It's this redhead boy Dr. Wonder thing is basically X-Men, mutants with like, but they're the results of like a scientific experiment gone wrong, more or less. Someone's experimented them using, because they have some kind of genetic thing called AGDS, and the synthetic stem cells they were given has caused them to have all these like deviated powers and stuff like that. So one of them turns into a chupacabra, one of them is a banshee. And one of them is a, I forget the name for it, but she has like very strong pheromones that makes people fall for her. But as the show progresses, their powers, so-called, change and evolve. So the banshee person started with only hyperacusis. She started with like heightened sense of hearing and then eventually evolved into, she can also use her vocal cords to transmit like, you know, high frequency sounds to like break things and stuff like that. And I don't know what the Chupacabra is turning
literally
into.
Literally all future, X-Men powers, so yeah.
Exactly. This is a remake of X-Men.
I like how what this is clearly a sign of is that you were having superhero withdrawal. You were just like scraping everything on the floor to get some superheroes now.
Hey, this was on Netflix and they were like, you might like this. And I was like, all
right. Yeah, Netflix knows.
Netflix knows.
Yeah, they know exactly what you like.
But Sam, we got to watch what was that show? Oh, the new Star Wars Andor or something. I think D-Man in the chat
cannot wait for Andor. I have not seen it. We have not gotten any early things because it's hard to cover Star Wars stuff.
Yeah. I mean, as a longtime Star Wars fan, I'm very excited to see how that goes. Because I think still Rogue One, probably the most underrated Star Wars movie in like the last few years.
There's a lot of good, even though like I feel like the editing is just really bad. Like it really, they chopped up that movie quite a bit. But yeah, there is Tony Gilroy, the guy who basically shadow saved Rogue One and directed large parts of it and like co-wrote it, is behind this new Star Wars show. And the reviews are great. I cannot wait.
Yeah. I really quickly want to shout out, and this isn't something that I prepped the team for, so graphically we might not have anything, but I did get to speak with James Cameron actually last week.
Just a little bit?
Just casually, for the upcoming Nat Geo/Disney+ series called Super/Natural. It's actually the James Cameron take on like a documentary show, a nature documentary. So it's basically like the David Attenborough type of thing, but made like a Marvel movie, right? Like imagine the nature documentary where you see like trees, flowers being pollinated or bees screwing each other, but like set to Avengers music.
Again, right up your alley. Did you get to see the show?
Like I have all the screeners and everything. I've seen the trailer and it's pretty cool. I was starting to watch one of them and I had to write more reviews. So it's on Disney+, starting, I think, September 21st. So, yeah.
It is always fun to see, like, James Cameron. He's done a couple TV shows at this point, and Darren Aronofsky, one of my favorite directors. Like, they are all over doing, like, nature shows and realistic stuff. Sometimes I just think it's, like, it's easy money for these guys. Like, it just...
Well, the other thing is it ties very well with James Cameron's whole thing of being an environmentalist, and he really wants people to, like, love the world so that by making these shows, if you think of them as, you know, your beloved Marvel characters... If you think a bee is your beloved Iron Man, you might want to save the bees.
Listen, if you want a movie about saving the bees, you should watch Jupiter Ascending. Did you ever see Jupiter Ascending?
I have. I kind of liked it.
The movie rules.
It's rough.
It rules. It's so good.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. It's sort of like what if the makers of The Matrix were like, let's do a YA novel for us, basically. Yes. That's
kind of Sense8 too, but yes.
Sure. Sense8's more adulty. On to what I've been watching. I want to shout out a show that I think all of you would enjoy. See, when I do this, Sherlyn, I'm giving you guys helpful tips of things you may actually...
I'm just being honest.
Sherlyn likes to service her trash.
I want to shout out Industry on HBO Max. This is a show about young financial bankers and traders set in London. And it is sort of like of a piece with Succession. It is about people who are kind of broken and kind of like bad people who treat everybody awfully or all kind of selfish. But I think different than Succession, this is a show about people who are basically at the bottom or like at the entry level. Not everybody's like super rich. Not everybody's like coming from a successful family. And they're trying to claw their way into power and influence in this bank. And what's interesting is that I think the characters are all really well done. Mahala Harold plays Harper Stern, who I think is one of the most intriguing main characters in the show right now because she is super selfish, kind of a jerk, like is often doesn't do the things you think a main character would do. But at the same time, I think is really believable and really interesting. This is a show about people who get way too into their work. And it's about overworking, and it's about like what the consuming nature of your job can do to you and your soul. So I'm just going to look over at Sherlyn right now for no reason at all.
I'm looking over at Sam.
We're just looking at each other. We're just like back and forth. I think the show is really cool. Like it's really well written. The characters are super interesting. Sherlyn, you will binge the show. I know what you would like.
I have so much stuff to binge already.
You will sit back and you will like binge the drama and the heartbreak and the sort of like... These are young people trying to get into the professional world, basically, and there are some older folks around too. I think the characters are really, really well drawn. It's super compelling. It's also weird because this is a show where I have no idea what is happening half the time. Like, you know, I follow tech stuff, but once we get to the financial sides of things, and you're talking about the like a lot of like trader code words for things, this show involves people just staring at Bloomberg terminals sometimes, and like that is the main action of it. It makes the character's reaction to what's happening very parsable, so I can understand that. But the actual the intricacies of what they're doing with stocks and trades and whatnot, no, I have no clue what's happening. But I think what the miracle of the show is that it's still good, even though that stuff is kind of indecipherable for people outside of that industry. So anyway, show's really good. It's really cool. Great characters, really well written. Trillin, this is your new binge. I guarantee it. Sam, what's up with you?
The thing that I'm just dived into this week is Cyberpunk Edgerunners, which is the anime version, anime show inspired by the game. And I didn't really play the game that much, but I am loving this show so far. I think it's incredibly well animated. The, like, the color, if you like that, like, neon cyberpunk aesthetic, this show is, like, endlessly, like, just eye candy for your eyes. The soundtrack is great. And it's directed by some the guy who did Gurren Lagann and Kill la Kill.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So
it has that vibe. It's,
and it's a, I think it's a Studio Trigger animation too. So it's like the quality is there, and it's like, and they dive in like 100 miles an hour. Like right, like the first 30 seconds, like you're into a fight scene, and it's like this thing is brutal. Like this is not like an anime. I'm warning you right now. This is not an anime to watch with your kids. It's like it's very
Studio Trigger
gory
stuff
and
is
gruesome.
Often very very much not the stuff you watch with your kids.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it's very very much in line with some of the previous stuff. But like it's just kind of an eye opener, and it's just like it's really it feels kind of refreshing in a way that is like especially if you like sci-fi anime stuff. It's like right up your alley.
Cool. Is this? I gotta ask, is this like real anime or is this CG anime?
It looks like real anime. It doesn't look like cel-shaded 3D stuff, but I could be wrong. Okay. The tech has gotten a lot better.
Some of it has, but then some of it is like, I reviewed, was it the Witch Ghibli movie? And good God, over Engadget. An abomination. Like a lot of that was just full CG, but there's also some like the Ghost in the Shell most recent show, which is sort of like cel shaded 3D CG anime. I'm like, oh my God, what are you guys doing? I don't know. This looks cool from what I'm seeing, actually.
Yeah, and it has more of the look of like the old school traditional hand drawn anime, which is like, you know, I love and I really appreciate.
Very
yeah.
cool. I think I'll check that out.
Well, that's it for this week's episode, everyone. Thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
And you can find Sam online at
Sam Rutherford.
And if you want to send me pictures of good food that's not Singaporean because I will crave, I am at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts.